Aloha.
Yeah. Here we are.
Hello, hello.
Hi, Rock to Recovery Radio. Coming at you live from the crazy streets of Laguna Beach, California.
It's real crazy out tonight.
It's crazy out there.
Crazy.
It's crazy. This is KX93.5 FM, Laguna's only FM, human crafted radio, as they say. And this is Rock to Recovery Radio. We have so many things to say in the beginning before I could even tell them who's next to me. And I'm your host, Wes Geer. I like the color, though. I enjoy it. I enjoy it. The color. I'm your host, Wes Geer. And each week, I kind of set it up like this. What are we doing here? Talking and stuff. What are we doing here? I'm a sober guy. I didn't die. And I love trying to help other people so they don't die, too. You know, there's a lot of people lost out there looking for answers. All of us have been touched by addiction or mental health. In some way, disorders like that. We've all lost somebody we know or had a friend close to us struggle or a family member. And, you know, I think in the old days, people stayed quiet about this stuff. They didn't know. We didn't have much knowledge. And now, by now, it kind of feels like, at least it, in my perspective, we all know about it and we talk about it pretty darn openly. And in so doing, we give people a safe place to realize that they're not alone, that there is an answer. And so that's why we're here. You know, each week we get the opportunity to interview some celebs, rock stars, rad humans, exceptional earthlings, and in tonight's case, a fabulous female who, as she shimmies and,
shakes. Shoulder roll. Hey.
Yeah. Hey, busting some dance moves. For those of you watching on Facebook Live, you saw it. She won Miss USA.
Miss USA.
Don't get it screwed up, Wes. Miss USA.
Miss USA,
2006. Mm-hmm. But you worked your way up to there because you did like...
Miss Kentucky. Right.
But I saw it because I did read your wiki over plate of noodles.
Oh, good on you.
Good on you,
mate. I read yours, too.
Uh-oh. It needs to be updated. It's like,
mine does, too. It's
terrible. It stopped like 12 years ago when before I started doing anything cool. Yeah, you did that, and it was I could relate. There was some, I won't say it yet, but some stuff happened in a club that got you in trouble.
Not necessarily. It didn't happen in the club.
In the club.
In the club. No. What happened was, hang on a second, I have to fix.
Sure, adjust.
So, what happened was, I was Miss USA.
Yeah. And you have to be a good girl.
Well, I think that the perception is that pageant girls are just good people that love Jesus. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
I think that, like, it's one of those things where you kind of present a certain persona when you're in the public, and then you go home at night and cry yourself to sleep, in my case.
Giant mask you have to wear.
Yeah, it was huge. And so I'm Miss USA. I'm living in New York. I've been a drug addict since I'm 14.
But wait, we haven't even told them who you are yet.
Oh, hi. My name is Tara Connor. I am former Miss USA 2006 recovery advocate. Sometimes I act and host radio shows and television shows and all kinds of stuff.
All kinds of stuff. Yeah. You're out there doing it. That's what you're doing.
Do it.
So thank you for coming down.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's rad. And you got your dude Eli here.
My fiance Eli.
Fiance.
Fiance.
Congratulations, you guys.
Thank you.
He's also kind of the bodyguard.
I'm the bodyguard.
Oh, okay.
Ow, ow.
Because Ernie, our engineer, he gets a little crazy. Sometimes you just have to be like, Ernie, come on,
man. Do you see Gypsy? She will attack.
Yeah, and we got Gypsy, the world famous micro palm. Hi, Gypsy.
Hi, Gypsy.
Say something to Mike, Gypsy.
Say something.
Here's your chance. Well, she nudged it with her nose. That's as close as we got.
Right.
So thanks for coming down,
Tara. Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
Stoked you are. How was the drive to Laguna?
It was actually really clear. It's Sunday.
Yeah, good.
That gotta love God's day. There's just no traffic.
It's the Sabbath.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's what we do. We're going to talk about stuff.
Cool.
And so what I always ask guests, because everybody's story is different, even if we all end up in a very similar place, which is, you know, dark and lost and hopeless and all that kind of junk. For some people, it starts in their childhood. For some people, it doesn't. Where would you say your story starts?
Oh, God. I think my story started at birth. I feel like I suffered from the unmanageability that is associated with addiction before I ever put a drink or a drug inside of my body. And
like what type of unmanageability?
Well, I think that a lot of people think that you hit your bottom by like wrapping your car around a pole,
right,
or, you know, ending up in rehab or, you know, a public meltdown, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, that unmanageability looked like waking up in the morning at like 4 years old, feeling like I'm not a part of, I'm not in my skin. I have anxiety already, suicidal thoughts by seven. Like,
wow.
Yeah. So,
that's early.
Yeah, it was super early. And I think a lot of times addiction starts with an untreated mental illness. And I
concur.
Yeah. So God knows I have a few of those. But yeah, I just life was just hard.
Like at 4 years old, you were already like, ugh.
Well, I'm an abuse survivor. I was molested by an uncle when I was 3 years old. And so that already just kind of like, I usually say that screwed me from the get go. Hey.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see what you did there. Dang. We'll be here all week.
Is this thing on?
Well, it's hard to follow up such a serious statement as childhood sexual abuse with a
well,
I wasn't ready.
I don't know. I'm sure people that are listening to this that are in recovery laughed.
Yeah.
Because that's the cool thing.
I'm a little slow sometimes.
Relate to each other, and that's all good. But yeah, so I think I just kind of started feeling different, feeling older than I was. Like I
that
always felt like I was older than my peers. Yeah. And I grew up in a really tiny town in Kentucky, like 2,300 people at the time. We had two stoplights. It was a dry county. They didn't sell alcohol.
Hmm.
So there was a lot of drugs.
How was home life? So you had the uncle thing.
Uncle
and then
thing.
What was the mom and dad thing?
Mom like? And dad is, it's, basically, a
normal. Did they know about the uncle thing?
You know, I don't know.
Okay.
Honestly, because the stories kind of like change as
sure.
they go along. I know what my truth is. I know what
yeah.
I experienced and how I handle it. And that's that. You know, I'm writing a book about all of my experiences, including that. But
good for you.
Yeah. I just feel like it's so normal. Like a lot of people go through sexual abuse as a child. And I swear, if you go up to any addict or an alcoholic and be like, so were you molested?
Right.
50 to 75% are going to raise their hand and say, I mean,
right.
I had an experience, you know. And so I think that just kind of like created this feeling of icky, like right from the start, because, you know, sex feels good, even if you're 3 years old. But you also have this immense amount of shame that's attached to it. Like, well, why did something that feels good, like, make me feel so terrible about myself?
Very confusing.
It's very confusing.
A lot of conflict in there.
A lot of conflict.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was hard because I mean, parents can tell when a kid is uncomfortable, right? So, like, they can tell if, hey, Eli,
yeah.
Why don't you come grab this little nugget?
I like her squeaking, but that's cool.
Well,
you want.
She's going to, I don't really get distracted, but okay. Thanks, babe.
Yeah.
Husband of the year. So I like to call myself Lisa Vanderpump without the cash. But
we'll be
thing
here all
on.
Yeah.
Here all week. but yeah, I just felt older, and I felt that I couldn't talk to my parents about these things because I could tell, like, if a sex scene came on the television, my mom would be like, hide your eyes. Like,
do you think
look.
It was for that reason?
Because
that sounds almost like a normal protective thing, like, oh, baby's too young to see this, right?
Well, right, but as a kid, I feel like we're so pure and we're so smart. We can tell if we're being lied to or if someone's uncomfortable.
Inside, you felt that was
right. And my mom, you know, I come from a family that's God-fearing, if you will. And so I just knew I couldn't bring it to them. It would be too much.
I mean, I feel like that's... I'm certainly not downplaying it because I had some stuff in my past like that. I feel like that's how everybody feels.
Yeah.
It feels at the very least like a very private thing that occurred.
Right.
I mean.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it kind of like warped my ideas and belief system on relationships and what love looked like. And, you know, because it's very confusing for a kid. Like, if you're being abused by a parent or, you know, like a friend or what have you, brother, sister, like, sometimes it's like, it's hard because you love them so much because they're your family, right?
Totally get that.
So,
yeah.
You know, but you're ashamed, and then you put the, they hit you with your shame muzzle so that you can't talk about it. And so, yeah, you know, you kind of become this outsider in a world full of people that don't know your dirty little secret. And for me, like, I really felt like if people knew the truth about my existence, I mean, because here's the thing, in my town, what I grew up with God sounding like was, if you drink, smoke, or have premarital sex, you're going straight to hell.
So you were screwed.
So I was screwed.
Yeah.
From the gate. Get it?
Oh, God. She's got a million. She got a million of them.
Yeah, it was hard.
Sure.
You know, it's hard as a kid.
And, you know, I like to talk about how when we're born, We don't know how to love, what love is like. Mm-hmm. We learn as we go.
Right.
And a lot of those lessons are wrong. And so when you experience stuff like you have and some of the stuff like that I had when I was young.
I kind of disagree with that. I feel like when we're born, we're at our purest form and all we know is love.
And I get that. But it's in such a, like, super simplified, pure form.
Yes.
You don't.
And then we start to learn how to lie.
It's kind of like driving a car. You have the basic programming of driving a car, but they didn't tell you about when you have a flat tire in the snow.
Right, the
windshield's broken.
For sure. But I, like I said, like, I think a lot of people, just the human condition is adopting these ideas and traditions, superstitions about life that aren't yours. They're your parents.
100%.
They're someone else's.
That's
right?
What I'm saying. Yeah.
And it becomes your identity. So I think we spend our adult life trying to figure out who we were before we decided to adopt everyone else's thoughts.
Right. And, I call it your normal, Y-O-U-R, right? Because everybody has their own and you don't know any other version to compare to because you're 3, 5, 7 years old. This is happening. You're like, well, this is normal.
Until
but
you
it doesn't
realize
feel
that
right.
It's not. Yeah, because
isn't that
your
weird?
Spirit can tell that something's happening to it.
Inside, without even a rule book or a teacher or somebody, inside you're like, this does not feel right.
Yeah.
I totally get that.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah. Like, as a child, not knowing that something's bad, but knowing innately that you're being harmed.
And isn't that, to me, is the essence of God and spirituality?
Right.
Is that connection? Because when it's pure, that's when you feel the presence. When it's not, yeah.
Yeah.
We are going deep here.
Yeah.
And so tell me, how long did that go for? Because you go on, because you said by 7. Mm-hmm. You had suicidal ideation?
Yeah, I mean...
what do you think took you to that point?
I think that... I'm not really sure what took me to that point. I mean, I had alcoholism in my family, and I had mental illness that was running in it, and then, of course, there was a codependent, like, mom trying to sweep everything underneath the rug, and...
What type of mental illness?
I think, like, depression. My mom has severe anxiety, and sometimes she gets depression. My dad gets really deep depression, and my brother also really suffers with anxiety and depression. So it's generally just a depressed family.
Wow.
Right? And so, you know, all of our feels would manifest in a different way. So my dad would drink, and my brother would play video games, and I would, you know, talk to, like, older boys and get attention that way, and my mom would clean.
Yeah.
You know?
Which that, like I said, I alluded to some of the stuff happened to me sexually young, and it makes you more promiscuous, right?
Because
you define that as love.
Yeah.
And I'm not using it as a blame, but I figure that out later. Oh, that's why.
And that's why we keep getting into bad relationships over and over, because we're trying to recreate that trauma, because that's what we learned what love was.
And that goes back to the statement when I'm saying you haven't defined love entirely.
Right.
So then, I figured it out for me. I won't get too deep in the story, but I was like, why am I looking for, like, kind of like a flirty attention from this girl that I don't even know or like? And I all of a sudden was hit with this truth, is because when you had this happen as a young child, that defined love to you.
Right.
Damn it.
Right?
Yeah.
We're not supposed to curse on the air.
I don't think that counts. The FCC, what?
Really?
Yeah, they're cool with that one.
Well, that's good.
So, and by the way, I always have to thank
they're coming to get me.
Oh, it was the FCC.
You know what?
They're flashing.
They're coming.
Yeah. I told you, it's the rugged streets of Laguna Beach.
Listen.
So I always think from the bottom of my heart, people like you that get so vulnerable and share so openly,
mm-hmm.
because it really does help other people out there to know mm-hmm. they're not alone. So I thank you for that and
thank
going
you.
There, because you don't have to. You know that. And so.
Well, yeah, I'm sure you relate to this. It's a responsibility. I mean, I feel like when you've actually lived in hell and then you've climbed your way out of it, you remember what it was like when you were there. And I really just needed someone to say, me too. I've
yeah.
also been through that.
Yep.
I get it. I've also done these crazy things. Like, you're not special, you know, like
mm-hmm.
I felt terminally unique. And finally, you know, I fell into this wonderful thing that is recovery that recreated my life. So
yeah.
people need to know that it's possible. I mean, the reason I became a recovery advocate was because when I was Miss USA and publicly went to rehab, when I got out, I did a media tour. And on the media tour, people would ask me questions like, do you think you're a bad role model? Like, you know, what
did that
do you
hurt
have to
when they said that?
I mean, sure. But I mean, at the time, yeah, like I was
yeah.
so embarrassed. I was just like, gosh, I know. Listen, but I went to treatment. Like, I'm
yeah.
trying. I'm doing
mm-hmm.
everything that I can
yeah.
to not be this jerk that you think I am. And,
right.
you know, the 32-year-old version of myself coming up on 12 years of sobriety looks at that and says, hang on a second. They're shaming me for being sick.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So when that shame that I felt is going to translate to anyone that was watching those interviews. And I just want people to know that there's no shame in being an addict. You're not a bad person that needs to, you know, act good. You're just a sick person that needs to get well.
100%.
And that's what I was. And I wasn't treated as such. And so I just kind of, I want those little Taras out there to know that, you know what, we get it. And there is a way up and out of that.
100%. And what I've heard shared, which I love to repeat, most everything I say, I just repeat. I don't have any original thoughts. No, is I heard a guy share, like, if you have a drug problem or an alcohol problem, you can quit and your problem goes away. But
no.
often, well, if it's only the problem with drugs or alcohol.
Sure, sure, sure.
But
sure,
oftentimes,
sure.
if you're like an alcoholic or something like that, where it's a deeper issue,
yeah.
you take away the drug. Because I know people who had like a cocaine issue. They
yeah.
quit and they're fine and perfect.
Great, great, great.
But for some
but
people
the
have
real ones.
For
like
the real ones
that
like
are,
you and I.
Yeah.
It's the drinking, the using is a manifestation of deeper issues that we got to get down
well,
to.
Well, it's my solution. I mean,
yep.
at the end of the day, you know, it talks about in one of these books that happens to be blue that alcoholics are restless, irritable, and discontent unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking another drink. So what that tells me is that my natural state is restless, irritable, and discontent. So if
mm-hmm.
you take my alcohol away, then I'm left with me, and the problem centers in my brain that kind of gets affected by the sick emotions of my sick spirit.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah, and I just did a talk Saturday and quoted that exact section. So
no,
I love
you
it.
Didn't.
I sure enough did.
I love that that doctor's opinion thing.
It's crucial.
It is.
And so the other part is, well, we're getting off on a tangent, but that's okay. The other part is, so, because people, I remember when I was going to get sober, or trying to get sober, or trying not to use,
mm-hmm,
I
mm-hmm.
was like, I'm so bored. It's like, no, you're not bored. You're restless, irritable, discontent.
Right.
Because now you know any human who has nothing to do is like, thank God I have nothing to do
right.
for an hour.
Yes. And when I'm well, I'm like, oh, I'm taking a nap.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But if you're fighting addiction or whatever, you're
right.
like.
Right. Well, honestly, the first 8.5 years of my sobriety, it was more like sobriety.
I see what you did there.
I was basically a drunk that should have been drinking. Like, I'm sure the people around me would have rather me drink than just not take care of the actual ism that is alcoholism.
Right.
They say that alcohol is just the symptom, right? So I saw that I was going to kill myself from a sober state, and that scared me. And that's when I actually feel like I got into recovery. So I've been sober, clean and sober for like dead sober for almost 12 years. But I feel like I've only been in recovery for about 3 to 4 years.
Yeah, that's powerful that you share that. And that's why oftentimes we hear about people killing themselves in sobriety, mm-hmm. Or sobriety, as you say. Yeah,
yeah,
I totally get that. It's a bummer. So let's go back here. So
okay.
seven years old, you're having suicidal ideation.
Yeah, I just, I was uncomfortable. Like, I was so uniquely aware of everyone and everything around me. And I always thought that people were thinking or looking at me, like thinking about me or looking at me. So I was kind of like in my mind trying to project to them what I thought they wanted me to be. I mean, I remember being in reading class and smelling stinky feet. And I was like, that can't be me, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and I try to get up, go to the bathroom to see if it's my stinky feet. And my feet were like a little stinky, but not that stinky. Mm-hmm. But in my head, I'm like, do they smell it? Do they think it's me? Oh, God, what if they think it's me? Like, they didn't think it was like the pubescent kid over there with zits on his face that his crack was hanging out. I'm thinking that it's me.
Uh-huh.
Or that they'll think it's me. It doesn't matter if it's actually me or not. But what if they think it's me?
Yeah.
I mean, my life was contingent on what other people thought of me.
Which is self-centered thoughts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I just felt out of place, and I also didn't really relate to kids my age. I never did. I wasn't like really clicky. I was also kind of a tomboy, so I used to, you know, play basketball and, you know, ride four-wheelers and go mudding with my dad, and I loved fishing, like just getting my hands dirty. And I wasn't a part of like any type of church group. And that was a big thing in my town. Like, if you weren't on the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, you know, team, then something wrong with you. And so I felt out of place there. And, you know, when I got into middle school, I was actually put on the varsity cheerleading squad because I was really talented with gymnastics and cheerleading. So I'm, you know, in seventh grade. And
so in seventh grade, you're on the varsity cheer.
Seventh grade, I'm on the
so
varsity.
So some of those girls were pissed.
Oh, yeah, they hated me.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
Saw that coming.
Yeah, I'm tinier than them because I'm in seventh grade, right?
Right.
But I was fearless. They would throw me up in the air. I was a talented tumbler. And so, it was competitive. It was like really competitive cheerleading. And
that's kind of how it is in the South, especially,
yes.
Right? The cheerleading is a whole thing.
Yeah. Just like pageants. It's like.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I am with people that are not in my age range, and so I'm not doing after school activities with my peers. I'm with juniors and seniors.
You're growing up fast.
I'm growing up fast. And, you know, I think by the time I was 14 was when it all like hit the fan. I'm sure you want to hear about this.
Yeah, I definitely do. What is this one you picked up?
Yeah.
At 14? Is that where we're getting to?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Yeah. Well,
so how much time do we have before
we got you know what? We do what we want in here.
Is
but you know what we're gonna do?
Tell me.
I think we could throw in your song now.
Okay.
And it's Hurt by Nine Inch Nails,
so
right?
So original. Yeah. I'm
actually the first person to pick that song.
Oh, interesting.
If you weren't, I may have said, hey, somebody use that song. But nobody has. And it's an amazing song.
It really is.
So let me do the radio host things I'm supposed to do. We're here with Tara Connor, Miss USA 2006, mm-hmm. telling her story. We're at about age 14. It's getting crazy now.
It's getting weird.
And this is Wes Geer. I'm your host. This is Rock to Recovery Radio. And I forgot to say it at the top of the show, brought to you by New Vista Behavioral Health. They have incredible programs for professionals and mental health and addiction and all sorts of stuff. And we're on KX93.5 FM. This is Nine Inch Nails. We'll be right back.
The old familiar sting. crown upon my liar's chair, full of broken thoughts I cannot repair. Beneath the stains of time, the feelings disappear. You are someone else, I am still
Nine Inch Nails.
So good.
God, so great. That first album, Pretty Hate Machine, was life changing. This is KX93.5 FM. You're listening to Rock to Recovery Radio. I'm your host, Wes Gear.
What up, Wes?
What's up, Leia?
Just kicking it.
Just chilling.
Just chilling.
Brought to you by New Vista Behavioral Health. See, I had to slow it down because in past shows I say it too fast. Ernie's giving me the thumbs up. He's like, I noticed that too. Been meaning to tell you. Why are we in Southern accents?
Why are we in Southern accents? Is my accent coming out that bad?
I think it's a shtick we got going on.
Man.
Anyhow, New Vista Behavioral Health, they have a variety of treatment programs for professionals and mental health people and addicted people and all sorts of stuff. If you need a treatment program, check them out. We are here with former Miss USA Tara Connor, fabulous female, and the world famous micro palm.
Little Gypsy the Palm, acting up.
Yeah, she's cute. She's very cute. And we're talking
husband.
to hubby. Grab the dog, sweetie.
Thank you.
Thanks, Eli. So we're talking to Tara about her, for those who are just tuning in, her childhood. She had sexual abuse starting at three from her uncle. She had mental health all through her family with her parents. And, you know, there's some alcoholism in there.
Mm-hmm.
You had suicidal ideation by seven.
Mm-hmm.
You felt like you didn't fit in.
Mm-hmm.
And then you started hanging with, you know what you also said? You're talking about worrying about if your feet smelled, and I could really relate because it talks about in recovery how selfishness kills us.
Right.
Because we're self-centered, and then I've had people talk about like, well, I'm not self-centered. I gave Jimmy some French fries, and I gave Bob a ride.
But what did you want from Jimmy and Bob?
Well, that means, you know, being self-centered doesn't mean you never did a nice thing. What it means is we get stuck so worried about us, what we didn't get, how did we act, am I weird, am I stupid, do you like me, those things. And that drove me crazy, too.
Yeah.
So, and then you went as a junior high girl, you're a tomboy, and you started doing varsity cheer.
Yep.
Now, again, for those tuning in, she's from Kentucky.
Woo, go Cavs.
They get crazy with their cheer stuff there. They have whole cheer conferences of like
competitions.
It's gnarly. There's 30 cheer people, and there's little girls flying through the air every which way.
It's a thing.
It's high intensity.
It really is.
And so you are crushing it at that. And as you might imagine,
Slaying.
Slaying. And as you can imagine, I'm sure there was some dissension in the ranks of older gals not digging you. So
well, much. I was like the little chihuahua that was like kind of like, hey, play with me, play with me. And you kind of want to kick it off like, shoo. You know what I mean? Yeah. Because I was a child.
Yeah.
And they're having to hang out with me.
Oh, I see.
And so, you know, and I also was kind of a dirty little, you know, trollop.
How so? Oh, you're promiscuous.
Yeah.
At a young age.
Well, I was going out with a guy who was 20 and I was 14.
That's a significant
difference. Which now looking back, that's disgusting.
It really is. For like him.
Right.
For him.
Like, you know, I was just probably looking for a daddy or something. But like, you know, I'm dating an older guy and, you know, they, I don't know, they just hated me.
Was it in the public? Like everybody knew?
No, but rumors, you know, I mean, it's 2,300 people. It gets around kind of fast.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, small town.
I think that they were just like, hodge kids, hodge wives. You know what I mean? They just thought that I would go after their.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess 14-year-olds were in that year.
Yeah. So.
Is this thing on?
It's definitely on. Yeah, I get it. So you said about 14. That's when it started getting crazy. Is that when you picked up?
Yeah. So 14 was a humdinger. My parents finally got a divorce that they definitely needed to have. My grandfather, who was my best friend, passed away from cancer. Mm-hmm. And what else was going on?
Who'd you live with when the parents split?
My mom.
Okay.
And then my brother stayed with my dad. But it was nasty. I mean, I think all divorce can be kind of petty. And my parents were definitely, I think they were trying to out hurt the other one.
Yeah.
Which I relate to as an adult woman. Like, I've been in relationships where it's like, I'll get you before you get me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so a lot of their attention was on not the kids. You know, I mean, my mom really couldn't tell me, like, no, don't go out. No, don't do this, because she knew that I would sneak out. Mm. So she really didn't know what to do with me. Like, I was really a handful, and I put her through a lot. And my dad was kind of the disciplinarian, but, you know, he would make bad decisions every now and then. And I would be like, how are you going to tell me?
Like what?
Like, you know,
he was a heavy drinker.
Yeah, he would drink sometimes. All the time. He drank a lot sometimes all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know, man. I was already at that stage where I was like, don't tell me to do something that you're doing.
Right.
Like, it's not one of those do as I say, not as I do situations, because I was hard headed.
Yeah. And when did you start getting into the Miss Teen stuff?
14.
Okay, mm-hmm. So lots happening at 14.
Mm-hmm. And I won my first. Well, first I got drunk. So this is what happened was the boyfriend that was, you know,
the
way older than me,
yeah,
cheated on me with another trollop. And I was heartbroken. Like, I was lovesick. Like, what's wrong with me? I'm damaged goods. Like, reaffirming everything that I already think about myself at the time.
Right.
Parents divorcing.
Which wasn't true.
No, but head said.
Right.
You know, it was very loud.
Which I totally get.
Yeah.
Even though I'm a man, I totally get that.
I think even men are like that. It's like, you're never going to be handsome enough. You're never going to be fit enough. You have so much body fat. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's you have this like kind of SLA thing where you need outside validation to prove that you're attractive.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Or lovable.
But that's
whatever
what I would do. Like, I that's when I started getting promiscuous, because it was like, oh, you cheated on me. Well, I was petty, though. I'd be like, I'm going to cheat on you. You're not going to know about it, but I do. Like, it was awful.
Yeah.
So, you know, things are just kind of falling apart. And I'm on an away trip to Gatlinburg, Tennessee with the cheerleaders. And it was during spring break, and the girls I was rooming with, they scored alcohol. And they asked me if I wanted to have a drink. And at this point, I hadn't touched anything. Like, I was smoking cigarettes because I, you know, whatever. But I had never picked up the drink. And, but I wanted to, I just wanted to feel a part of, right? Like, I wanted to feel like I fit somewhere.
Yeah.
Even if it was with these girls that really disliked me. And I was like, maybe this will make them like me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, I drank with them and I got hammer smashed, like hammer smashed the first time I drank. And it was chaos. You know, there was like girls cutting themselves in the room and then having sex. Like, you know how high school is.
I mean,
have you seen 13 Reasons
Our
Why?
Our alcoholic life seems the only normal one. It's kind of
right,
like that,
but it's so normal in high school, unfortunately. But
cutting. Well, sex I get, but
cutting. Yeah, that's a big thing now.
It was big then. I wasn't exposed to that. I'm not saying it wasn't around me, but yeah.
Well, whatever. It wasn't exposed to me. I just figured it out. It was like, oh, this is a pain that I can control.
Mm.
It's like they said in that song, like, I hurt myself today to see if I still feel.
Totally.
You know what I mean? I focus on the pit, the only thing that...
That sounded just like Trent.
I thought so. Yeah. So, I get hammer smashed. It's chaos. I'm like, holy crap.
Well, how'd you feel?
I don't remember. Blacked out.
You didn't take... Because oftentimes people take the first drink like, oh, I have arrived. This is my stuff.
No, that wasn't... That really wasn't my experience. I chugged so much vodka so quickly, and I was trying to act like I'd done it before, like I'm a professional.
Oh,
you know
yeah,
what I mean?
I drink all the time.
And yeah, and I blacked out. Like, I face planted on the bed. I came to throwing up. And that's when all the chaos was going on in the room. And then I, you know, thought I was drinking water and I'm drinking strawberry daiquiris. And it was just what I felt was I felt like I found my people.
Mm-hmm.
Like I felt like, oh, because this is how I feel manifested in reality. And they're just like me. And so in a way, I felt a part of.
Chaos felt like home.
It felt like home. And so... You know, the next day I had the worst hangover of my life, and I swore on everything that was holy that I would never drink again. And it was like that firm resolution, right? Like I made a firm resolution never to touch another drop. And I meant it. Like I meant it with everything in me because I didn't like how I felt. Like I was hungover. I was sick. Like I could smell vodka everywhere.
Mm.
God.
Vodka and vomit, let's be
just,
clear.
Just, and I was like, you know, they were throwing me up in the air and I'm doing backflips.
The next day and you're hungover.
Yeah.
How did you not toss cookies? That's impressive.
You know, I don't remember if I threw up or not. I probably got it all out the night before, but it was rough.
I'm telling you.
And I also, you know, I kind of made this pact with a God that I didn't believe in. And I was like, dude, if you get me out of this one, you know, I swear I'll never do it again. And I really meant it when I said it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, here we are. You know, at the end of that year, I was putting pills up my nose.
Mm.
You know how it just progresses.
Yeah. When you're like us. For other people, it doesn't. But people like us, it definitely does.
I'm like, ooh, what's that pill? You know, I don't know. I'll take it. Let's see what happens.
My good friend Brando says something. Like I said, I love to steal these nuggets from people. But he talks about how. When he would swear he's never doing it again, he says, if you gave me a lie detector test, like when I left
you would have passed it.
I would have passed
right.
it. Right. But, and that happens, right? I will never, and you would have passed that test, but guess what? Something else comes into play, which is that powerlessness, that restless, irritable discontent
yes.
needs to be dealt with.
Well, you know, I just, I started finding my solution, you know, and I started finding and experimenting with different things. Like I became a chemist.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was just treating these underlying issues while trying to fit in, just noticing that I'm feeling better. And, you know, like, whatever, here we are. I was one of those quote-unquote functioning addicts, whatever that is. But,
whatever.
You know, I functioned normally when I was high.
So you're doing what kind of pills?
Percocet, Vicodin, Oxys, morphine.
All sorts of stuff. At 16 and then
14.
14.
Yeah.
And then you started entering your teen pageants
Same
at
year.
14 and you won the first one you were going to
yeah.
say?
Yeah. Yeah, Miss Russell County.
Did you think it was the pills or anything?
No. I didn't. I honestly didn't think I was going to win at all because, you know, listen.
Did you have to train for that for a long time?
Do
you just jump in and...
I kind of jumped in. Well, here, I'll tell you a funny story. So my grandma... Okay. So they have these interviews that you have to do. How much time do I have?
We're doing good. Like we got about 18 minutes. We're good.
All right. So I did this... my mom sat me down and we practiced like interview questions. And who do you look up to the most? And I would be like, my grandmother, because she's going to college after not graduating high school. And then, what do you want to be when you grow up? I was like, I want to be an attorney because I'm a really good arguer. And, just trying to come up with these questions that weren't mine. They were my mom's, but she was, trying to help me. And I remember when they asked me, because they did ask me the question, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I was like, well, first, I want to graduate high school, and then I want to go get my GED, and then I want to get my PhD, and then I want to be an attorney.
Yeah.
You know, because I was so nervous, and I'm just throwing out these words and all these,
You want to get a high school diploma,
accolade.
Then get a GED?
Well, first I wanted to become a doctor, then I wanted to get my GED, because I didn't know what a GED was. You know what I mean? I just heard the letters, and it got mixed up in my brain, and they found it endearing.
Oh, really?
It works
for you.
It worked.
Wow. Happy accident.
Yeah. Ignorance is bliss. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I started getting competitive in pageants, and there was something about that experience where everyone started looking at me differently, and they started giving me some sort of weird respect that I don't know what kind of respect a 14-year-old gets, but, like, I'm on the front page of all two newspapers in my town. They're saying how great I am.
Yeah. Well, that's a nice thing to hear when you've been dealing.
Well, I found my mask. I finally found what was going to kind of like carry me through this so-called life for as long as I could do it. And
looking good on the outside.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I can dress it up. I mean, look, I was high when I won Miss USA. So we had like 5 hours before the live telecast because it was on NBC at the time. And I was like, well, I can take a nap. So I took a Xanax. Mm. So I was just kind of like, I mean, I was there, but I was just like, meh.
Wow.
Doop-dee-doo.
I'm going to guess there wasn't any other girls taking a nap.
Oh, no, there were plenty.
Were y'all doing Xanax?
Well, there were a few of us.
I just feel like I'd be so nervous that you couldn't nap.
Well, if you pop a Xanny, right. You can take a nap.
Yeah. So there's a lot of drugs going on in the...
Well, I mean, there's a lot of drugs going on in hospitals. There's a lot of drugs going on in high school. There's a lot of drugs going on the football team.
But
pageants are no different.
And I certainly get that. Yeah. But for me, as one who's not in that world, I didn't ever think and go, oh, yeah, those little Miss Teen USA girls are all popping
Raging.
Fannies. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the listeners probably hadn't thought that either, but it makes perfect sense now. So you win.
Yes.
And when I said looking good on the outside, too, the other thing to point out wasn't – I didn't just mean, like, because the obvious thing, beauty. But a lot of times, like for me, I got a record deal doing – piles of methamphetamine.
Right.
So if to the outside world you have success, it hides a lot of flaws.
Yeah.
And I'm not even, like I said, I'm not talking about, being handsome or beautiful or whatever.
Sure. I mean, yeah, it helped. It made me function at a better rate. I mean, especially when I found cocaine. Like when I started doing cocaine, I was like, oh my gosh, I can ace every test.
You were doing it in
hell,
college.
Yeah. Wow. Can I say the H word?
Yeah, I think
okay,
so.
Okay, thank God.
Damn in hell. Thanks for asking.
Yeah.
So you went on to do college?
So after I graduated high school, I took a year off because I wanted to like model from Kentucky, which I actually did. Like I would call up different bikini companies. And I contacted Body Glove up in Canada, just got their phone number and was like, hey,
just
I want to model
yourself.
For you. And they were like, can you send us some Polaroids? So I went and got a disposable camera, took pictures of myself in bikinis, and then, had them developed and sent it to them. And I became a Body Glove girl. So I was like traveling.
Body Glove was the shiz too.
Heck yeah. And I was, it was awesome. I was traveling to cities I'd never been to. Mainly it was just like trade shows like Miami, San Diego, Orlando. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And how was the use then?
I mean, it was great. I did a lot of blow when I was doing those jobs. Mm-hmm. but, you know, I think I just felt, I felt like I was achieving something because, you know, I think a lot of us try to pin our problems on the area that we're in.
Sure.
And I felt like if I could just get out of Russell County, that'll make it better.
Yeah.
And so, you know, here I am trying to hustle to get out of the situation that I was in, really with no direction. I didn't know what I would do, how I would do it, who I would do to do it. You know what I mean? Like, I just went. And then
So did you feel like you had a problem at this point? Something was wrong?
No, I didn't. No. Did you feel like you had a problem at any point?
I mean, when I was I kind of knew I was, but I didn't care.
Right. I was like, "Hang on a second. I'm winning pageants."
Exactly. I'm
real
a rock
cute.
Star.
Like,
yeah. Who cares?
I'm
this
good.
Is what we do. This is what we do.
This is I was like, well, I never have to pay for it. But it was always around, you know, it was just like never not there. And so I, you know, was able to justify using because I was like, people do cocaine all the time.
Sure.
I mean, everyone tries meth at least once or twice. You know what
Why
I mean?
Not?
So, yeah, I just really wanted to get out of there. And then the following year, I decided to go to college mainly to put it on my resume for Miss USA. Because, you know, I didn't want to be the Kentucky girl without a college education, right?
Okay, that makes sense.
And so I applied, and that's when I was pretty heavy in my use. I was doing, like, you know, full-time whatever. And then I ended up dropping every class except for public speaking because of marijuana. Can you believe that? Mm. Like, I can do heroin, but I can't smoke weed. But the one class that I didn't drop was public speaking, and that's what I do. So school works.
School works.
Yeah.
So what, tell me. So you're kind of pulling it off.
Kind of.
And then you go into.
Then I go.
To do Miss USA.
Right, yeah. See, here's the deal. Like, my thing, I was going to marry my current victim at the time, mm-hmm. and I was going to have babies and just start that whole process over again, right? Because mm-hmm. it's all I knew. And at Miss USA, like, my goal was to get second runner-up because at least that was as good as Kentucky had ever done, mm-hmm. or first runner-up because I would have made history. Mm. Because no way am I going to win this pageant, you know? So, but I did. And it's crazy because my life changed in a flash. Like, I moved to New York City. My boss was now Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. I had to live with Miss Teen USA and Miss Universe. I had a sash that said I was someone. I'm walking the red carpet with, like, A-list celebrities. It was weird. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know what a cross street was. I never had Starbucks or sushi.
And
I didn't
and
know
the whole
how to
time
hail a
you're...
cab. I was, but I didn't want to look stupid, so I didn't ask anybody. I was like, no, that's not good. Nope, okay. It was very hard.
So behind the scenes, you have this raging drug problem.
Sure.
And then that's interesting to me because, yeah.
Raging, here's the thing. I feel like when we use words like raging drug problem, I never looked like I was raging. Like, my raging would be like sitting on my bathroom floor talking to a stranger
well,
for
I don't
hours.
Mean range in a party sense.
Yeah, no, I mean for the... real. But like, but you know what I'm saying? Like, I yeah. feel like it's confusing for people who don't know that raging just means sitting on the bathroom floor looking for crumbs.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
How or about like, you had an intense drug problem?
Yes. That's I absolutely I had a mm-hmm. drug problem. I was addicted to everything I could get my hands on.
Yeah. And so what hitting bottom, is that what I read in the, you know, wiki in the papers
well,
where you're supposed to have this persona because mm-hmm. it's a clean thing, Miss
so
USA.
What happened was I pissed off Miss Teen USA. And
you pissed her off?
Pissed her right
you
off.
You did cocaine and made out in a club.
Yes, that did happen. But she wasn't doing cocaine. It was just me. And we weren't, it wasn't in a club. It was in some bar we were drinking those like beer things. What do they call them when they're like really big? It's like a whatever.
Really big beers.
Really big beers. And, you know, we were girls having fun. Yeah. What is... Not a pint. No, it's one of the bigger ones. It's like, it's football.
They're like tourist size, yeah. I know.
Anyway, so she had a boyfriend in town, and you know, a lot of the things that she went out a lot with my friends, and she got into some sticky situations, and I think that she tried to put it all on me. And so then he came and attacked me and was like, "You're such a bad role model, and blah, 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 blah. You should be ashamed of yourself." And, you know, I'm so used to lying my way out of things. But if you give me like an inch of truth where I'm like, "You're wrong," I will use it. And so I did. And I threw her under the bus for a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, we were all hammered that night, but she was like, "Yes. I'm going to tell the president and organization everything I know about you." I thought she was bluffing.
So you had a beef and she was going to tell
everybody
that you were a cokehead.
Yes.
And so Donald, it went out in the press.
Okay, so they were like, "All right, we're going to drug test her." I drug tested. I told
you were going to lose your crown.
Well, you know, I figured I would.
Yeah, you were going to lose your crown.
Yeah, I tested positive the next day. It was on the radio saying Miss USA has failed a drug test for cocaine. And by the end of the night, I'm on all of the major news stations, like mm-hmm. even on SportsCenter, because it was such a sensationalized
idea. How did you feel?
Honestly, I feel like part of me was just like, what do you do? Like, I was getting death threats from like Afghanistan, and people were calling me, you know, anything
why?
That you would. Why?
Because
I was a bad role model.
Wow. So people were freaking out.
Huh? Yeah. I mean, they just made me out to be like this major trollop, like this person that was major promiscuous.
You had tainted this.
Like, I was promiscuous when I was 14 and 15. But when I was like 20, it really slowed down, guys.
Hmm. So because what we talk about a lot in hitting bottom it's, you know, maybe it's for
mine
some people.
Mine was a public bottom.
Right. But how did you feel? Because usually it comes along with, you know, some dark thoughts.
So I got sober basically because everyone told me that I should. And I'm in rehab. I don't want to identify
kind of
as an alcoholic. Yeah, kind
it.
Of. Yeah. But they're like, "You're in here. You're an alcoholic." And so I was being, you know, marginalized for not identifying as an alcoholic by marginalized people. And I finally was just like, they all got wild applause. Like when they finally identified and was like, "I'm an alcoholic." Everyone was like, "Yay, good job." So I figured that that's just what I was supposed to do because everyone was watching me. And honestly, my fear of looking bad kept me sober for 8.5 years. And that's why I was so miserable, because I didn't really understand what being an addict or an alcoholic was. Yes. Like I thought, all I have to do is like go to meetings, you know, because I heard the cliches like meeting makers make it, and just hold on to your seat and blah, blah, blah. And I did that. But I was too ashamed to tell people that I wasn't doing well in my mind. You know, I was starting to see gun emojis going to my head. It was just kind of like an ideal of what's the point? Just end it. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, I hit my bottom in sobriety.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
So let's throw in a little bit of the song right here and then talk about the key elements of how you changed from those dark, you know, moments of sobriety, which I love that. We're going to use that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll talk a little bit about life now and what the keys are to having a rad life.
Okay.
In the vortex of radness, as
all
it
right.
were. All right. So we're here with Tara Connor. She's being rad, sharing her story. Former Miss USA 2006. This is KX93.5 FM, Rock Recovery Radio. I'm your host, Wes Gear. And this is Seven Dust. What's the name of it?
Live Again.
Live Again. My homies. Here we go. Those are my boys, Seven Dust. I have a history with them way back. This is Wes Gear, Rock to Recovery Radio, KX 93.5 FM, Human Crafted Radio, also brought to you by New Vista Behavioral Health. I'm here with Tara Connor, former Miss USA 2006. Mm-hmm. We're telling her story from childhood sexual abuse, crazy family life, winning Miss Teen Kentucky, whatever you call it, the right words.
Yep.
Having a cocaine habit, winning Miss USA, as I was saying, and now you got in trouble because you got ratted out. They found out that you're
ratted out by Miss Teen USA.
The world's pissed at you.
Yeah,
for tainting
everyone's
the
mad
title.
At me for. They called me Mess USA, which is brilliant.
They called me Wes the Mess.
Can no! High five? Oh
yeah!
My gosh! So the title of the book I'm working on is Mess USA: The Guide to Becoming the Disgraced Beauty Queen. Because I was disgraced. Because they called me a disgrace. So,
but I feel like you need a happy ending there. So, now here's where we're at. This is a cool and unique part of your story.
Okay.
I think it's important to highlight.
Okay.
You didn't really want to get sober. You kind of had to because of the career. You're in a rehab, and you suffered dry.
Yes, like I couldn't deny that being sober greatly enhanced my life because I wasn't having as many bad nights. Right.
Sure.
I was still having those thoughts of like, I mean, am I an addict? But everyone knows that I'm sober now. And everybody said I was an addict. And
can I control it?
Maybe we
overreacted.
Thoughts. That's the obsession, that mental thing. This time it's going to be different. This time I can drink like a lady. But I knew that I had so much
wrapped
in.
I can do blow like a lady.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, like, if I ever would have relapsed or would relapse, I would go to heroin right away. Because that's my jam.
Yeah.
But.
So tell me, how dark were the thoughts in sobriety? What did they feel like?
It felt terrible. I mean, you know, honestly, I woke up one morning and I realized that him coming back isn't going to fix it. Booking a series regular isn't going to fix it. Making, eating a pizza, like no amount of forensic files would fix it. Like it was just a lot of, it was bleak, you know, I got to a point where I couldn't make myself feel better. Like there wasn't anything outside of me that would make me feel whole. And I was so disgusted with my life and the way that I had treated my relationships and everything. Like I just got sick of me, right? And I beat myself into a state of reasonableness sober. And I realized that nothing's going to make me happy. And that's scary. You know, I think we all have these ideas of what we think is going to make us happy. So then I really jumped into the work. I started fellowshipping down in South Central and Skid Row at a lot of CA groups. And, you know, it's real. It's life or death, you know, and they treat it as life or death. And because it's all real ones. It's not like a couple moderate or whatever. It's just like real addicts. And so I got a sponsor, did everything I was told to do. I went to a meeting every single day for almost over 3 years.
Awesome.
You know, when people are like, no, do 90 meetings in 90 days. I'm like, try 365, you know, like I realized that I was completely powerless over everything in my life. And I also figured out during the process of going through, you know, step work and just, you know, really looking at myself that I was asked to, or my sponsor told me to get an assessment. And they tested me for like depression and gave me all these things. So, you know, I figured out, oh, I've had depression since I was a kid and finally got proper medication for, I also have a panic disorder and severe ADHD.
Wow.
Yeah. So but when I was always against taking medication because I was like, people that take meds are weak. The 12 steps fix everything.
Which isn't true. Some people need meds.
And I'm one of those people. I remember I called my mom and I said to her, Mom, if this is what real people are supposed to feel like, I've been suffering my entire life. And the change was so drastic. Like I finally wanted to leave the house. Like I wanted to go to the gym. I wanted to go see friends. Like it didn't feel like I had to. And it made it easier for me to focus on my recovery and really clean everything up. So I just, you know, what I did was I realized that my way wasn't working in any way, shape, or form. and that someone might know better than me. I'll follow their direction. And I had my own experience in that, and it was excruciating and beautiful, and I saw exactly who I wasn't and who I was. Petty Crocker, you know, like I would see a girl and she's like younger than me and I'd be like, I hate you. No reason. No reason. It's just jealousy. She's cuter than me. My boyfriend's going to steal her and drop me, get a newer model. You know what I mean? Like, I hated people for getting things, but I also wanted to feel superior, because if I felt superior, then no one could really make me feel bad, you know? So I was just a hot mess, and I saw that it was all my doing.
I totally get that.
Yeah.
So let's back up really quick. We got to wrap up. We're running over. I love it. And I love that you share so honestly. That's what I was asking earlier about the bottom, because you had a incident, which
yes.
can bring bottoms, but it wasn't until you had the emotional bottom that
right.
you really made some changes. But let's back up a little bit.
Okay.
So, everybody.
Just give it to me straight. What do you want to know?
What we want to know is Donald Trump was your boss. And what I think is cool. I won't opine on him at all. Well, I think it's cool that he said everybody deserves a second chance.
He
what
sure
was he
did.
Like?
What you see is what you get.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I can't
You've
really...
answered this question many times.
I sure have. But, you know, he was never inappropriate with me. Like, I was never wrapped up with any... He was actually very kind until he wasn't. Like, we've raised money together for addiction, and
cool.
then something happened. Like when he was running for president, that's when he called Mexicans druggies and rapists. Mm. And of course they wanted to ask me about it because he's running for president.
Right.
And they're like, so what do you think? And I was like, well, you know, I think we took a huge step forward for the recovery movement by sending me to treatment with a second chance. But we take a huge step back and add to the stigma with language like that. I said, if he's running for president, I think he needs to be a little more responsible with his language. And then he was like, you forgot. Like,
oh, did he get mad?
Yeah. Like he allegedly sent me an FU letter.
He doesn't like that. Well, anyhow, enough about that. You're rad. Tell me.
Thanks.
Tell me about how rad your life is now. What you got going on?
You know, life now is you know, they say that you're in sobriety, you'll have a life beyond your wildest dreams. And it is. Like, I never thought that I would be happy, like, getting into a stable relationship and having three dogs and gardening and, like, being in a job. Like, I work for SOBA Recovery in Malibu and San Antonio. We do a show live once a month in San Antonio with Daniel Baldwin and Greg Hanley. And we just talk about recovery. And I have a TED Talk and I'm writing a book. But all of that's just stuff, right? Like, you know, it's all just stuff. The good things in my life is that I'm present for the people that I love. I try to help someone every single day. I can go to sleep at night. I don't give two flying F's what anyone thinks of me, because it almost killed me. And there's freedom. That's the best way that I can put it. Like, I just have this amazing freedom. And I love who I am. I love every stupid thing that I did. And, yeah, it's great.
I love
it. Kind of like being Wonder Woman and having, like, the shield of invincibility.
That is why we do this show.
And I'm getting married.
Congratulations.
I've had 4.5 failed engagements.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm pulling the trigger.
Do
but
it,
I was never
girl.
Well enough. Now you're I'm well
there.
Enough. So you're welcome.
And I'm going to offer you Sacred Sons Band, which is the Rock Recovery Band, to play if you need it. So listen, selfishly, I love this because I get, like, it's so cool. I get to go deep with people, amazing humans like you. We have, our story is so similar.
Wow.
Except I'm a man and you're a woman.
I got it.
But aside from that,
pretty
eerily
dead on.
Similar. You're amazing. I appreciate you coming down and sharing. And you've come to the last couple Rock to Recovery shows, and I think you're coming to this one. Maybe not.
Well, I
just
booked
lie
an
and say
event
you are.
September the 15th. It's on the 15th, right? But I'm flying in that night, so I might be able to make it.
Well, let's hope you can.
I'll come from the airport.
I'll buy you an Uber if you can make it. Either way, I hope to see you there.
Yeah, I hope to be there. I love that event.
Thank you. For those of you at home, it's Rock to Recovery. It's a sober concert. We honor Moby this year.
Oh, cool.
And Tommy Vext of Bad Wolves. His story is incredible. Steel Panther's playing.
Nice.
We're going to have some cool people down there. Jamie Presley said she's coming. My friend Brian Fogel, who won an Academy Award this year for this amazing documentary, Icarus, is coming. I hope you come. I'll buy you and your man an Uber and... friggin'.
Thank you.
I don't know, something.
No, I'd love to. I'll definitely try to make it this year.
Rad. So we got to bounce. This has been Tara Connor here on Rock to Recovery Radio with me, your host, Wes Geer, on KX93.5 FM. Thanks for listening. Just remember, you're never too sick to get help. We love you. And we're out of here.
Yeah.